Talking History on News Talk.
Well, welcome back to Talking History with me, Patrick Gagan. Now, I'm delighted to welcome to the studio Paul O'Dear to talk to me about, well, a forgotten but a very influential in his own lifetime cartoonist and artist called Gordon Brewster. Paul, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks, Patrick.
Can you tell us a little bit about Gordon Brewster? Because I suppose he's remembered now, if he is at all, as a cartoonist, and his cartoons in the Irish Independent entertained and informed people for many decades. But he was also an artist.
He was indeed. Where I came across him really was that in my family, my mother had a shop, the Gem in Howth. And in my family, there was this one sentence: Gordon Brewster, the artist, died in the mammy's shop. And we didn't know anything further about him. Other than that, and when I was doing my family history, I was used to going in and getting certs and things. So I wondered, had he actually died in the shop, or had he been taken bad and carted away? So I got the cert, and he'd actually died in the shop. So this was a sort of a, if you like, an emotional association, but I didn't know who the man was. And then my friend Felix Larkin told me that the National Library had acquired a collection of nearly 500 of originals of his cartoons. So he arranged for me to go in there and have a look at them. And when I went in there, I decided I'd go right through them and sort of sweep through them and try and get a sense of the man. And in that afternoon, I sort of came to like the man for his sense of humour, for his political commentary, for the quality of his cartoons and so forth. And the library then invited me to do a blog post in their blog, which I did. And from that, the interest sort of spiralled. An aura fall in the library put me in touch with his family, who were in England. And I met his daughter, and a lovely woman. And the whole thing then spiralled. I started analysing the library cartoons and finding out about his personal life and all that sort of stuff, you know.
You mentioned Felix Larkin there, and we've had Felix on the show about his wonderful book about the Seamus cartoons. There really has been a renewed interest in historical cartoons, and it's one of the reasons why we wanted to bring you on the show to talk about Brewster.
Yeah, well, if you like, I'll just do a quick skite across this interest that you've mentioned, because in looking up Brewster, I obviously came across it with Felix and James Curry and Kieran Wallace and people like that. And I mean, the cartoons have been probably undervalued by historians, I suspect. They're sort of the icing on the cake that you don't bother about. But very often the cartoonist has an independent attitude, and there is stuff in his cartoons that can very often be either at variance or that can expand on the editorial stance of, say, the paper that he's in. And then they vary in quality and so forth. And there has been a series now of books. Thomas Fitzpatrick in The Leprechaun at the beginning of the 20th century. Kieran Wallace and James Curry have done a marvellous book on him. Ernest Forbes, you've mentioned Felix Larkin on the Seamus cartoons. And Ernest Kavanagh, James Curry has done on, who did cartoons for the Irish Worker. And as well as that, there are increasing references now in say, other publications to cartoonists, which you wouldn't have had to the same extent, I don't think, in the past. Michael Laffin in Judging, W.T. Cosgrave, has five of Brewster's cartoons alone in it. And Mel Farrell in his Party Politics has three of Brewster's cartoons, and the Irish Revolution papers have up to a dozen of them in the course of theirs. So this is sort of, as you say, like, it's a rediscovery both of a genre and of individual people.
Okay, so tell me about these cartoons then, because he worked as a cartoonist for the Irish Independent. He was writing, he was drawing these cartoons during some of the most interesting decades of the 20th century after independence, and when there's great excitement and there's great uncertainty. What kind of cartoons did he do? What did his work focus on, and what was his work like?
Well, what we have most of, and the best representation of his work, I suppose, is the collection in the National Library. Now, that's only a proportion, although a very significant proportion of his work. And that relates to his work between 1922 and 1932, which, of course, is a critical period of the foundation of the state and the consolidation of the state. And his work, basically, most of them are political cartoons. And they contain also what I'd call caricatures. In other words, they're cartoons that contain political figures who are caricatured within the cartoon, if you know what I mean. And he has done a lot on W.T. Cosgrave, on some of his ministers. He had a particular preoccupation with Northern Ireland, which regime he absolutely hated. And he did cartoons on Craigavon. He has one cartoon that he's taken from a Dutch cartoonist, Remakers, who did vicious anti-German cartoons about German atrocities in Belgium in the First World War. And he's put Craigavon into one of those. He has probably the distinction of having been deported from Northern Ireland when he was up there. They hated him as well. They knew well what he was at. And the RUC picked him up one day in Belfast and dumped him back on the border. He has did a lot of British stuff as well, because even in those days, and you'll know yourself from looking at the newspapers, we still tended to look at the outside world through British eyes very much. So he has done a lot on that, and he's done stuff on the general strike and so forth during that period. He's done then some international stuff. He has a Hitler cartoon with Hitler with a megaphone, but it's the only one of them that's in the collection. But that's 1930, when Hitler was just coming in. He has more Mussolini ones because Mussolini was more established, and, you know, that various stuff, and a few American cartoons as well. So most of the stuff is political. His daughter told me that once the news came on the radio, it was hush in the house, because he would listen to the news for themes that he wanted to do his cartoons on. The actual cartoons themselves are very crafted, which is why I suppose it's great that we have the National Library originals. They're a sort of pen and wash, and the sophistication, if you like, of the presentation doesn't really come across in a newspaper replica. And also the caricatures that he does, I'm inclined to say he's not a cut and paste caricaturist. In other words, he starts with a blank page and he draws the character newly, fitting in absolutely to whatever the particular situation is that he's illustrating.
How respected was he in his own lifetime, and what do you think his legacy was, and how perhaps we should remember him today?
Well, I'd say he was respected because, I mean, people saw him every day, and certainly the content of the cartoons was very substantial. He did odd ones as well, like Don't Forget to Change Your Clock During the Year, this sort of stuff. But I'd say about 90% of them were politicals. Unfortunately, as I said, like, he was remembered in my family as Gordon Brewster the artist. His own family are Gordon Brewster the artist, was what I found when I was talking to them. And unfortunately, I mean, he was an artist. He went to the Dublin Metropolitan School. He exhibited in 1916-17 in the Royal Hibernian Academy. And he did various fine art, we'll call it. But unfortunately, his marriage broke up about 1933, and his wife went off to England with a fella. And when he died suddenly, she came back to sort of look after his sort out his affairs, and, as the daughter said to me, to claim the children. Now, he had done a will just after she had left, putting stuff in trust for the children, so there might have been another motive there. But effectively, what she did was she had a bonfire out in the back garden, and anything of his stuff that was around went up. He had a 1917 fairly large painting of the dead rebel, which was of a rebel that he saw himself in 1916 in Stephen's Green. And Dolores told me that that was on the wall up to his death in Sutton, and that has now vanished. And there were some nudes, she told me, as well. But Biddy, the wife, obviously there was bitterness there, and anything that was around of his went up in flames. I've only been able to find one actual piece of fine art of his, which is an old Irish woman's head, just a portrait of a head, and that was in the basement in the Hugh Lane. But so I'm sure the family would like to have him remembered as an artist, because that's primarily, I think, how he saw himself. But as opposed to not being remembered at all, he will now be remembered, I think, for the cartoons, because they're a tremendously sophisticated piece of work.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of Talking History. I'd like to thank everyone who put tonight's show together, Susan Cahill, my producer, and Jojo on sound.